The following is a production of Vanderbilt's Owen Graduate School of Management. For more information about Owen, please visit owen.vanderbilt.edu.
We're here at Enjoying Conference. I'm a finance professor here at Vanderbilt, and I'll be moderating this session, which is titled The Market and Information. And the topic that we are tasked with is to think about how corporate social responsibility affects shareholder value and the extent to which investors reward social responsible initiatives by firms with a higher stock price. So this is an issue that's really interesting to me personally because I've done a number of research studies on mutual fund performance. So anything related to stock performance is interesting to me. And in particular, I've done a study on socially responsible mutual funds and have examined the behavior of investors in those funds relative to investors in other funds. So this topic is something that I've thought about, you know, with a certain perspective in some detail. So that said, I'm very excited to hear what our panelists have to say on this topic. So they bring a really rich body of experience and different perspectives from mine on the topic. So what I'd like to do is introduce them briefly and then give them a chance to speak on their current role and their experience on this matter. And then we can open up the floor to questions from the audience. So to my left is David Lowen, who is responsible for researching and evaluating the social and environmental corporate citizenship of different companies for inclusion in some mutual funds that his company, Patch World, manages. So before joining Patch World, he was also a senior social research analyst at Citizen Advisors, Inc. And then to David's left is Graham Sinclair, who also has experience in investment management. Currently leads the Principles for Responsible Investment Emerging Markets Project, and he is also a visiting professor at UNC and the University of Geneva. So I will now have David talk a little bit about his role at Patch World.
Sure. Thanks so much for coming, everyone. Really appreciate this. My job at Social at Patch World Funds is the director of the social research department. And what we're doing in Patch World is we're applying what we call ESG criteria, so environmental, social, and governance criteria to our investment process in addition to the financial analysis. And you've probably heard this, there are some other firms that do similar stuff to Patch World that are here at the conference this weekend. And one of the things that Patch World has done differently in the past year or so is to really think about the nature or the way that we're applying some of those criteria. And previously, we've been applying what we would call negative screens. We had sort of this zero tolerance for companies in certain areas, so companies involved with alcohol, tobacco, gambling, and the like. And we started to realize after many, many years that although we started with this intent in 1971 when Patch World was founded, we started to realize that some of those absolute or zero-tolerance screens were no longer really realistic, and they weren't really getting at the heart of the problem. And I'm sure many of you have heard about Patch World and Starbucks a couple of years ago, when Starbucks launched its own line of, or licensed its brand name to a series of coffee liqueurs. And although Starbucks, rather, was not actually involved in the manufacture of that liqueur, they did receive some revenue from it, and Patch World had to sell that company from its portfolio. And that really prompted us to think about what was the real goal of our criteria. And we realized that it's not alcohol that's the problem, it's not gambling that's the problem, it's the abuse of those. So that led us to this larger exploratory process about what are we actually doing with our investment criteria. We started to shift from negative screening and responsible investing to what we're trying to call sustainable investing. And so that's led us to try to figure out what are the positive criteria, what are we looking for in our investments. And that's really led us down this road of if a company is involved in a negative area such as, or an area that traditionally been considered negative by Patch World, such as alcohol or gambling, what are they doing about it? And that sort of carried over to other aspects of what we do too. So if a company has significant environmental impacts, what are they doing about that as well? What are they doing about their supply chain? And we're finding that those are positive things that are affecting the company's bottom line. They're able to attract, you know, bright students like you, because the trend is for, you know, discriminating students to want to go to companies where they have good diversity policies. They want to go to companies where the company's paying attention to their environmental impacts, where they're trying to do something good at the same time they're managing their business. And funny enough, that also correlates, our experience tends to correlate with a couple of studies about how SRI funds have performed. There's a firm called Innovest in New York City, also they have offices in Toronto and a couple of other places. They're applying what, you know, a modified ESG criteria as well, and they're evaluating the environmental performance of all companies in a particular sector and assigning them grades. And what they found is that the companies with better grades are the ones that have performed better in the long run. And Goldman Sachs study, maybe you've heard about that recently too, they're also finding that companies that are paying attention to all of these issues tend to outperform the peer group. And a lot of other studies that have been done about mutual fund performance, particular SRI mutual funds, have shown that maybe half of them have shown that it doesn't really affect financial performance, that just excluding companies based on their environmental record, or more precisely, sometimes their involvement with tobacco or alcohol and the like, it doesn't really affect performance. And in some ways, that's intuitively, that makes sense. You're not really trying to seek things for your portfolio, you're just trying to avoid stuff. So if just trying to avoid stuff means that it doesn't really affect performance at all, that's great. So what we're trying to do is take that next step, and what some of these other studies, including Goldman Sachs and the most recent report, sort of a report of reports, really, by Mercy Consulting, and in cooperation with the United Nations Environmental Program and Finance Initiative, UNFFI. And what they're showing is that by doing this overlay, not just paying attention to ESG, but doing the financial analysis and ESG, to find that those companies are outperforming. And that's what we're trying to do at PAX, but we're trying to figure out what exactly is helping those companies outperform. And part of the problem there is that there's not a lot of standardized disclosure about that, so we're calling companies to provide us with more information about their ESG initiatives, their ESG impacts. But it can be a little difficult to find that. So that's our long-term goal. We're trying to get more quantitative about it, try and learn a little bit more about you know, what are the specific factors, how do they correlate to specific financial indicators of performance, and wrap those two into one. We briefly before this panel, we were talking about how our investors value ESG performance, and one of the indications is how often people come into our funds and stay there, especially when times get tough. And we're finding, and I think that your paper was finding this as well, and I think that Graham would probably agree that social responsible investors, or investors who are interested in sustainability issues, those investors are what we call sticky. And when times get tough, they're going to stick with you. They're going to be more likely to have a long-term focus, essentially. And then that's what we're trying to do as an asset manager, too, is to have that long-term focus where in 5 years, 10 years, you know, maybe a little bit longer, some of these ESG issues that the companies are paying attention to, that's when they're going to have to pay off. And luckily, our investors either get that message or they think similarly to start with, and they also feel like that long-term approach is really going to help us add value. So I will stop there because I want to give the other folks a chance, but I also want to hear your questions later too, because that's where it really gets interesting. So
I'll turn the floor to Graham.
So how many of you like Reese's peanut butter cups? I'm sure I've had them. Yeah. Okay. For me, I regard chocolate as a basic component of the food pyramid. I think it's fundamentally broken the way it is, and I'm lobbying hard that chocolate has a fair representation. However, I disagree with most of you in the room, I guess, and my own wife, that peanut butter and chocolate should never be mixed together. But I'm willing to accommodate your difference in taste. In many ways, the issue that we discussed today around what is the opportunity for SOI, responsible investment, or investments that integrate environmental, social, and governance factors, is the answer that you gave. It is the answer that you invested. When you buy things, when you vote for certain politicians, when you invest in certain ways, you're sending signals in the market. Yeah, capitalism in action. So the only reason why these two gentlemen next to me have a job as academics or fund companies is because people buy their product. They buy the quality of the education you offer. They buy the quality of the invested research and returns that you offer. In my role at the UN, what I'm trying to do is to take the principles for responsible investment, which is unpri.org, you can check it out. These are aspirational principles, six of them with many underlying actions that help you execute on these principles. And trying to take these principles and get the way investment as usual is conducted and get it to change. Maybe in the same way we could separate our peanut butter from chocolate, but that could be a tough job. My view is that investment as usual is broken. That investment analysts, investment researchers, investment decisions that fail to integrate environmental, social, and corporate governance factors creates risks for investors that very often they don't understand. And in many ways, could actually forego quality returns on a risk-adjusted basis. That's the fundamental approach that I take personally and what I'm taking professionally and working with the UN on the PRI. My role in emerging markets, really the reason why I took this role, is not for the nightlife in Geneva, it's not for the price of Starbucks by the lake, which is about twice as much. Interesting to note, the margins are looking good by the stock. I think fundamentally with these six principles, if we can get more major investors, I deal in the world of pension funds and insurance companies, we get CEOs to sign the principles. If we can get more investors to accept these principles and to invest their money according to these principles and tell their supply chain that, we can fundamentally change the way investment is conducted. We have challenges. So by show of hands, who has got a 401k plan or some kind of pension fund retirement investment? Okay, so let's go with maybe 90-95%. That's a very good showing. We know that the U.S. has a net to savings rate, yet we have a large issue. So my first question always is, are you investing? Looks like the room is investing. So my second question, by show of hands, who, in talking to their financial planner, or selecting their mutual fund today, are invested in a way that integrates environment, social, governance factors, by show of hands? There's our challenge right there. I'm trying to solve it at an institutional level. Other people are trying to solve it at a retail level or where the retail funds are rolled onto 401k platforms. In the emerging markets that I'm looking to work with, it's even more challenging. I'm dealing with 25 plus countries. I'm dealing with Hungary, Poland, Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Philippines, Thailand, South Africa, Kenya. Taking principles of responsible investment to these countries is not easy, especially when you don't speak any language other than Afrikaans or English, which doesn't always go down that well in Brazil, but people are willing to accommodate us. If we can get more investors to integrate environment, social, and governance factors, it will have a multiplier effect in the investment industry. Investment decisions are often made in a very personal fashion. If you speak to an investment analyst, 2 days ago I was with UBS on Wall Street. At the end of the day, investment analysts often sell a story. They say, company A has got a great widget, company B has got an equally good widget, but company A's story, the way they think, their strategy is fundamentally better than company B. They tell stories that back it up. Facts, of course, fine young MBAs like you have crunched the numbers late into the night. But at the end of the day, it's a story that has to appeal to their portfolio manager, the chief investment officer, ultimately to the clients. So So these investment decisions are fascinating, which is why your research was fascinating to me, and why, in my context, the institutional investment decision is fascinating. If any of you follow through in working with large corporates or small, and you have the opportunity to be on your 401k committee or pension fund trustee board, I encourage you to be on that. Hopefully the fact that you self-selected to come to this session, that you are a Net Impact member, means that you get it around sustainability. So you are one more chair that could talk that trustee board to think about these issues. That would be fantastic. But simply from a view of understanding institutional investment decisions, it's a fascinating place to be. It's a place where bright people with creative minds who understand stories and can apply them to a universe are well employed, and their time is valuable. From your position, I would encourage you to think about how hard it is to do what we're trying to do. Investment on any given day is tremendously hard. It's very often true, in my view, that a good company may be a bad investment, and a bad company could be a good investment. So, for example, in May 2006, in the European utilities sector, there was a wrinkle in the CO2 markets. CO2 is traded through the European trading scheme in Europe right now. Price is somewhere around 20, 22 euros per ton. Around May 2006, there was a serious wrinkle in the market where the quotas had been given for these emission credits, and the prices of utilities started to go out of sync. What had happened was there was an over-allocation. Too many companies said this was too hard to do to reduce their CO2, and then voila, within 6 months, they were all well below their limits, and so frankly, trading these emission credits, and so the value was a lot lower than it needed to be. What is fascinating at a major analyst shop in London was suddenly the ESG analyst was bombarded with questions from his regular utility sector analysts, who came to the ESG analyst and said, "We don't know what's going on with the utility sector. We've heard a lot about these carbon credits and now what?" So very quickly, they had to upgrade themselves. They had to enhance their approach to analyzing utilities in the European context. Of course, it begs the question, why were they doing it before? This is simply to illustrate that this is not easy. It needs smart people. If you're not feeling smart, if you haven't had enough coffee on a given day, don't go near this, because it's going to be challenging. Which for me is part of the fun of being involved, is that you have to be creative to think through this. You have to push yourself harder, you have to be smart, you have to do the numbers, but you need to keep some open space about, well, if water is priced differently, and Coca-Cola on average needs 3.82 liters of potable water to make 1 liter of Coca-Cola, what are they going to do in water-stressed environments? How many water-stressed environments do they have bottling plants in? These are great questions. In the room today are some talented analysts that I've worked with in the industry, including one who's had great experience working with Tiffany and Coca-Cola. You should chat to her afterwards. These are not easy questions. But I fundamentally believe if investment as usual is broken, the way that it needs to be fixed is to integrate environment, social, and governance factors into the approach of the investment decision. Not just by choosing SRI funds. From the PRI point of view, we want to change the whole game. So we want CalPERS to sign on, we want PACs to be signed on, we want a small shop, a large shop, we want the analyst head in the game, we want the research providers head in the game, we even want stock exchanges to be in the game. So that's our question, right?
Well, I'm
going
to exercise my position as moderator to ask the first question, and this is directed towards Grain. It's related to my research on investors in SRI funds. And in particular, so the standard economic paradigm is that investors make their decisions based purely on, say, the mean and variance of the returns of their investments, right? And under that standard paradigm, an investor should only worry about SRI if they believe that the company's, maybe failure to foresee future costs or potential costs of ignoring sustainability, if they believe those are important. So in my research, I kind of examined whether investors also had sort of an extra financial attribute that they cared about. In other words, when you asked us if we consulted with our financial planners and said, you know, I want to invest with SRI, should we be doing that because we think it's by nature a good thing, or is there a financial benefit to doing so? And then if so, what form do those financial benefits take?
Sure. I think the benefit is around 33 basis points over a 36-month period. Okay. your attention, didn't I? For me, the hardest question is around performance. Because especially when you're looking to model performance or fund returns, it's actually a multiple hypothesis. You're betting on the speed of the trader of the fund company that has the investment idea to perhaps make a trade. Yeah. It could come down to that could materially impact returns. How much cash they had over a period might overweight whatever smart sustainability plays they had in their portfolio. So I have not, and you know, my good colleagues wrote that report, the NOSA report. There's a lot of good material in there, but for me, I can't comprehensively say SRI portfolios or responsible investment portfolios or sustainable strategies will always definitely outperform non-strategies. There's fundamentally a benchmark problem to begin with because you're going to work with different accountants. But what I am willing to argue strongly is that it won't necessarily cost you returns. I think to your question about who is doing the investing and who is asking the question, I think that's a fundamental question that every investor needs to understand. Why are we doing this? What will make us stay exposed in this area? So anyone who's invested right now in China's given them 80% returns over a 6-month period. That's phenomenal. People stop asking questions after 10% return over 6 months. So I would say just in the way investments as usual is conducted, there's not that much thinking. But there seems to be this higher hurdle where we've got to solve kind of nuclear physics and astronomy that I've never figured out in my life. We've got to have that level of PhD thinking to prove sustainability. My approach is, if you're an investor and you understand these issues are important for you, vote with your feet, buy into that portfolio. If you don't choose to do that, I can't force you to go that way. I will convince you that any company today, what we're investing in, the security of that company, any company today that doesn't appreciate environment, social, and governance factors into their strategy have got themselves an Achilles heel and an opportunity to be held below the waterline. So I can't necessarily argue that every dollar should be invested according to these principles. But I'm willing to argue that companies, which are the targets of these investors, they create a huge exposure for themselves. That's our answer to the question.
Okay, I'll now kind of twist it a little bit and ask David a related question, and that is related to, say, the performance and the past performance of SRI funds as a means of, you know, addressing my original question. Unfortunately, the way that we typically analyze investment performance is, you know, we examine the historical performance, you know, and say, well, yes, the SRI funds did or did not outperform. But if you're modeling investor decision making, you know, what you really need to do is look to the future, right? So assess risks in the future, assess expected return, not based on what's happened in the past, you know, your forecasts of, say, additional regulation or consumer reaction to SRI and CSR. So, in your role at Pact World, to what extent do you, in addition to looking in the past and the historical data, to think about, you know, benefit, financial benefit, forecast risks and growth in firm industries that have exposure to this issue?
That's a very good question. It's tough, and I think there could be breakdowns by industry and in terms of what we look at specifically. I think that with many companies staying in the consumer discretionary area, corporate reputation is going to be a huge element of, you know, how well a company does. So in addition to whether or not, you know, they decide to bet on stonewashed jeans for the fall and hard of hards, it's just straight up dyed jeans. You know, there's also the issue of, you know, are say American Eagle or whoever, are they going to have negative headlines splashed all over the place about whether they have sweatshops throughout the Pacific Rim, they're not monitoring them properly, etc. And so that's sort of the backward-looking approach to that. But the forward-looking approach is, what is the company doing about that? How are they preparing for preventing those abuses from happening? And by doing so, they're able to proactively address and proactively protect, in many ways, the value to their brand. And there, you can apply that same sort of mindset to a couple of other different issues. Utility companies, the most recent example, TXU, which was planning to launch, I don't know the exact number, but let's say 17 or 11, all right, 11 coal-fired power plants, you know, the whole idea of, you know, how is carbon going to be treated in the U.S. and what is the price going to be here? There's a lot of unknown about whether or not there's going to be a cap and trade system. Is there going to be a carbon tax? How are all those issues going to be addressed? So the way the company is able to handle it, you know, that's maybe a little bit of a complicated example, but how are utility companies in general, how are they addressing what the price of carbon might be? How are they anticipating what the regulation might be? And from our perspective, when we're trying to evaluate what would be a good investment for our portfolio, it is, again, it's not just evaluating the environmental, social, and governance aspect. It's combining that environmental, social, and governance aspect with their ability to execute on their plain financials. But how are they anticipating that? And for that matter, are they anticipating that? Are they paying attention to what those risks might be? And if they're not paying attention to it, getting back to Graham's example of Coca-Cola, you know, the cost of water, 3.9 milliliters going into the Pacific Coast, are these companies paying attention to these issues? Are they incorporating it into their midterm and long-term business strategy? And if they're not, that to us is a sign of, you know, maybe assuming too much risk, or maybe they're not taking advantage of opportunities that otherwise could be had.
I would add one other works example. There was a McKinsey study in 2002. The report came out around corporate governance premiums in emerging markets. The ratio was different between Latin America, Central Eastern Europe, Africa, ranging somewhere between 15 to even 30% that investors were willing to offer entities that had better corporate governance than their peers in country. So ESG factors are relevant to the investment decisions you make today and going forward. Yes, in some places you can find a better premium. In other places, perhaps the market's too efficient, you won't find less premium. Another anecdote that's stayed with me over the years is Winslow, a management company. The positioning they took with that fund, they originally started as a large cap fund. It's a green mutual fund. The position they took to go mid to small cap and change the fund mandate was because that's where they found the most premium to be had by focusing in on these sustainability issues, and particularly around environment. So it's often hard to look at the performance issue, and where you as an investor looking forward, you want to encourage companies and you want to share in that good return, that you would go to any investment. I think there's a lot of differentiation between which asset classes and over what periods of time. But differently, ever since, I think it was the 8th of May 2005, that Eco-Imagination launched. I think I remember that because I was still new at KLD, and for me, this had fallen from the sky. I couldn't believe it. I ran through our research director, Eric Kernel, and I said, what? GE's going green? What? Shortly after that, the elephants started to dance on TV. But can anyone here, has anyone done a study, who's identified exactly what better return on investment the shareholders of GE from 7 May 2005 have had because of Eco-Imagination? Now, I know anecdotally they've hired talented engineers who chose GE because of that program. I know heaps of marketing people who've gone running there because it's a really cool campaign in some ways. but I haven't been able to find evidence of an eco-imagination premium. And if someone spots it, please get right back to me, Graham.Sinclair@unbri.org.